Welcome to the Purity Podcast, the show designed to reach men fighting for sexual purity. We will share our experience, strength, and hope to help men overcome sexual addiction or compulsive sexual behaviors. So, whether you're new to the journey or a seasoned veteran, welcome. Welcome to the Purity Podcast. Today I'm talking with George about the importance of community as it relates to recovery. I gotta be honest, I had no idea that rats would be a part of this conversation. But then again, George is here. And I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the Purity Podcast. Hey, everybody. Glad you're here at the Purity Podcast. I'm here with George. We always have to have George come along for the ride because he brings all the entertainment. And today we are going to talk about the importance of community as it relates to recovery. George, thanks for being here today. You have anything you want to say to kick things off?
Yes, I bring the adult entertainment. That's what I've been told. But it's all in terms of sex addiction, right? We talk about the recovery aspect of it, but you know, we got to be an adult.
We have actually on the disclaimer on the show notes that any episode with George is off viewing or listening limits for the wives. So
yeah. Anyway, going back to our topic of community. You know, when you asked me, hey, what's the next topic for the podcast? Obviously, I couldn't use one of my old jokes. So I decided to be serious. And I was like, you know what? I think it's important to focus on the importance of community. And I've been really blessed to have a group of men around me that I can, you know, hang out with, that I can talk to, that I can go to lunch with, that it's not just going to the meeting and boom, I'm gone. I leave. I show up late. I leave early, kind of like the Longhorn fans at Memorial Stadium. So I like to stay the whole time. I like to get there early. I like to, you know, hang out at the tailgate and then stay afterwards for the press conference and make sure that I enjoy the whole thing. Well, that's what community is in recovery for me, is that it's not, yes, we're supposed to be anonymous, but I'll tell you this. I mean, a lot of guys, they've met my family, they've met my wife, you know, friends of mine that I go hang out with or we go to dinner with every Friday night. I mean, they know all of me. And so that's been a real blessing to have that community. But going back to, I guess, theoretical psychology, the reason that I started focusing more and more on community instead of just sobriety was, I read once where someone wrote, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection or community in my verbiage. And so there was this experiment done back in the 70s by a guy up in Vancouver, Canada, his name was Dr. Bruce Alexander. And so what he had noticed was that they were showing these commercials of these rats in this cage, and they're all sucking down the heroin laced water from the water bottles until eventually they died. And so he said, you know what? I wonder what would happen if we change things up, because all these rats are stuck in this cage. Despite all their rage, they were still just a rat in a cage. Mm-hmm. And so they would, that was lyrics from a old 90s song, Bullet with Butterfly Wings by, you know what I'm talking about? The Smashing Pumpkins?
I do know the Smashing Pumpkins.
Despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage. Well, these were rats in the cage laced up with heroin. And so what this guy did, he went and built a big rat park. And when I say big, I mean, it's probably just inside of a room in a laboratory. And he took these rats first, and he stuck them in a cage and fed them the heroin-laced water, and they sucked it down, and they got addicted to it. And after like 50 or 60 days, he said, you know what? I'm going to bring these rats back into the rat park that I built and see what happens. So he pulled all those rats out of their loneliness, because they're all isolated. and they were all sucking down heroin, and they got to play with each other and hang out this rat park that he built. And guess what? They all learned how to skateboard like Tony Hawk. No, it wasn't that kind of rat park. They all stopped using heroin. They didn't go for the water laced with heroin. They stopped doing it. They started enjoying themselves, enjoying their rat friends and doing rat things or whatever rats do. And they started like living their rat life the way it was intended, without drugs. And what he noticed was he studied it further, and he realized that, you know, during the Vietnam War, heroin was actually quite available to all the U.S. soldiers, and an estimated 20% of them became addicted to heroin there in Vietnam. And so there was this huge like fear that, oh my gosh, all these guys are going to come back to the United States and they're going to be all hardcore heroin addicts. But the most amazing thing happened is that only I think 95% of them came back and were able to adjust to life and not stay addicted to heroin. And so the small 5%, yes, they stayed addicted and they had to receive treatment. But what he found was that when you remove the soldier from that hostile environment, similar to how you remove the rat from the hostile cage, and it reintegrated them into society, into a community, there was no need for the heroin. And heroin's an extremely, extremely addictive drug. And it's has a very low success rate on kicking the habit, if you will. Not as low as meth, but it's pretty low and it's very dangerous. But I mean, this happened after Vietnam. This happened with the rats in the park. And it just goes to show that, you know, via science, experimentation, that community is extremely important in any addiction recovery. Being able to change your environment, you know, not just go to meetings, not just show up and you know, share and then leave, but actually hanging out, you know, maybe before the meeting or even after the meeting, going to lunch. I know I do this food fund and fellowship after the Saturday morning meetings, and a group of us go to lunch, and I'm starting to think it's because I like to pay for everybody. So they're just using me for a free lunch. So
meal. Yeah.
We're not going to talk to George. We'll just get our free meal and just come and go. No, I do enjoy going with them, hanging out with them and learning more about their lives outside of that recovery room. But it takes some time. It takes some strong recovery and confidence. And it's worked out really well, especially being Christians, being followers of Christ, and living into that principle of being brothers in Christ and supporting one another.
Yeah.
That was a really long monologue, wasn't it?
No, I love it. I love it. That's so good. And, you know, it's one of those things that if anything that we learned from COVID-19 and just that period of time is how important community is, right? Now you transfer that over to just the idea of community with those who are like-minded, right? And you put a group of addicts in a room together who have the same challenges, they have the same cravings, they have the same, you know, addiction. And though it's different and unique for each person, it's very much the same. And so just that idea of community and support from other men who are like-minded is such a huge thing when it comes to fighting, not just for sobriety, but for, you know, strong recovery as well.
So, you know, funny thing, when I first started doing this, like Food Fun Fellowship and going to movies, stuff like that, I was part of Sex Addicts Anonymous, and that's really anonymous. Like, you don't even like acknowledge each other a lot of times. But I would tell my wife, "Yeah, I'm going to go hang out with so and so, or I'm going to go see a movie with so and so, or I'm going to eat dinner with somebody before the meeting," and she would just like freak out, like in her mind, she was thinking we're going to go out and just go to a strip club together. Or go act out somewhere, you know, with a bunch of women. And she didn't understand that that was part of the healing process, is building that strong community of individuals in recovery.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When I first started in Castamonia, I begin to journal again, and I'm showing George my journal right now. You know, it's the original journal that I had. And I think I've talked about this in the past, but the way I journaled is, you know, I'd write, you know, left to right. But then what I did was I just flipped the journal over and I went the same direction. But on the backside of it, I started with words of encouragement. And so I literally have all of these pages are full of text messages and voicemails and conversations that I had from guys in my community, right? Who supported me. And it would be from, you know, I've got my twin brother here. I've got one of my best friends.
Wait, daughter. You have a twin brother?
I do.
Oh my gosh, there's two of you?
Yeah, we're identical and he's handsome.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, crazy, eh? Yeah. Anyway, I've got, you know, notes from my pastor and all these things. And because, you know, early on, there were so many days that I would wake up just feeling like a piece of crap, you know, like just feeling like so much shame and so much guilt and hurt and sadness. And like, I just needed, even though I wasn't in community at that moment, I had community because I was able to go and look at these things that these men had said to me that were encouraging me, that I was becoming the man that God had called me to be, that I could become the man that God had called me to be. And they just kept encouraging me with different text messages and voicemails or even in-person conversations. And I would take those, you know, from memory, and I would go write those in my journal because I just wanted them to be words of encouragement when I was alone and really needed someone to talk to. And I think that's one of the things that I learned so much about Castamonia and a support, true support group, with how the importance of community was. I can just tell you, every time I started to feel down, every time I needed somebody to talk to, I would get a text message out of the blue. I would get a phone call from a guy who was checking in for himself, not even checking on me, but just doing a check-in for himself to say, hey, I just need to talk to somebody. And he didn't even know, but at that moment, he was ministering to me because of the check-in he was doing for himself. And that's why, you know, I encourage so many guys, like, you got to pick up the phone, you know, pick up the phone or text 2 to 3 times a day to different people, because that community, that's not just for you when you're sending that text or calling that person, it's not just for you, it's for them, because they need encouragement in their walk as well. Just as much as you need accountability in your walk, they need that encouragement as well.
So I have a question for you about what we were talking about. Yeah. With you and your twin brother, when you were dating, did you ever try to go switcheroo with a girlfriend or anything?
See, you know, that is, if I had the top 5 things that people ask me about being a twin, that comes up in the top 5 100% of the time. And I say the same thing every time. I didn't have enough dates to want to give one up to my twin brother. That was not happening. Yeah, no, not happening. So that never happened. Okay. We have plenty of those stories we can take offline. Or make a completely separate podcast on, because that could be fun.
You should have them show up to like the retreat or something and really mess with people.
Yeah, that would definitely mess with people. Might mess with him a little bit too.
So touching on the whole communication thing, I mean, I really really enjoy communicating with guys, like when I'm not in either a meeting or with them in person. And like you said, just a simple text to see how they're doing. That, one of my biggest triggers is boredom. And so I know that if I get bored, then my mind starts wanting to counteract that feeling, that negative feeling or uncomfortable emotions that stew from childhood. And so I'll just pick up the phone and I'll start texting some of my friends in recovery. And I could text silly stuff or dumb memes or just funny stuff that I thought of or I came across on the internet and just to break up the monotony. Now, a lot of them they respond. There's a few that don't. but quite a few of them respond, especially if I were to actually need a phone call or need to talk to somebody, text somebody. then they would definitely respond. I mean, today I texted a whole bunch of people that, you know, it's been it was exactly 15 years ago today that I walked into my first recovery meeting at noon over in West Houston. And yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't have any friends outside of those in the adult entertainment industry, which really weren't friends, or it was just kind of a weird relationship. But and it was really difficult for me to enter that room and not know anybody. And but now, you know, 15 years later, I know hundreds of people, if not thousands, that I've come across, and especially those that are close to me. And like a lot of them responded to me. I mean, like a huge majority of them, five of the hundreds that I sent a text to. I mean, that's great, right?
Hey, you know, that's interesting. That's the exact number of listeners we have.
Yes,
That's great. Five.
fine. But just the fact of reaching out and being there, and not because I was bored or anxious or anything like that, but I was really grateful. And I wanted to share that gratitude with a whole bunch of guys and just thank them for being a part of the recovery process, or my personal recovery. And a big part of that was that they are part of my community of friends. You know, I consider these guys friends, not just recovery people or acquaintances. I mean, these are my friends. These are my brothers in Christ that I can trust, that I can lean on when I need it, need help. I even had my old accountability partner from, you know, 10 years ago respond back, and that shocked the hell out of me. I was like, oh, whoa, this guy's been gone forever. So that
That's
was really
awesome.
great that I got that as well. So it was really blessing just by me wanting to reach out to my community. I was definitely blessed in return.
Well, you said something there that made me think about this whole idea of community is when we find community with others who are fighting for the same sexual freedom that we're fighting for, we're actually leaving a different community, right? And I think that's important to understand too when you're looking for community with like-minded men who are pursuing Christ-centered sexual recovery. You got to leave some people out of your life now. You got to get rid of some relationships, and you need to, sometimes it's a conversation, sometimes it's just deleting or blocking a number, right? But you've got to get out of a community, that community, so that you can thrive in this new community. So I want to give you, like, I'm just going to highlight five of these things, and you hit on some of these during your conversation about the Rat Park, which I think was really fascinating. What do you think is the most important thing when you talk about support? Why is in community, why do you find and how do you find support in community?
Well, really, it's in at my church, but more importantly, in meetings. I mean, there are so many guys that I meet that I have some kind of connection with, whether they're a Texas A&M grad, or you know, an engineer, or they like, you know, some kind of subject that I'm into. They're into Star Trek or Star Wars. I love sci-fi, Lord of the Rings. You know, and just when I get to know them better, when I choose to get to know them better, right? Because I can easily just show up and leave and not get to know somebody. But when I get to know individuals outside of that meeting, let's say at lunch, and we talk about different things, you know, I sat next to a guy that's an electrical engineer. And I'm not an electrical engineer. I'm a different type of engineer. But man, we were just talking about all the classes and stuff we took at A&M together, you know, at different times, and just being able to relate to one another and text one another outside of recovery, but it's still recovery related. But it's this has nothing to do with recovery. Now, that's where I found the greatest amount of support, to be honest. You know, I love church. I think it's great. But for me, a pure and unadulterated church happens in those meetings on Saturday morning for me, or whatever recovery meeting I attend, because those guys are honest, authentic to a point, because they're all broken. They know the only way out is by rigorous honesty. And so I trust them more than I would trust, my head pastor or my executive pastor. Because
Yeah,
we
yeah.
know, and I know those guys, but I know these guys in these rooms a lot more, and I've shared more time with them outside of the room or outside of church than I have with anybody else. And so that's my main source of finding support, is at recovery meetings, at my recovery meetings, and like I said, getting to know the guys outside of that meeting room.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've told people a number of times that Castamonia is, it feels more like church than any church I've been a part of. And it happens, it partially happens because of the men in that room, but it also happens because I'm willing to go in and invest in the room as well, right? I'm willing to participate and be supportive of others at the same time. Another one I have that I think is important about community is it helps us reduce isolation. And I think this was critical for me in my early days of recovery because I did feel so isolated. Like I said, I gave up one community and now I'm moving into this thing called recovery, which I was like, I don't even know what that means. I'm being told I'm a sex addict, had no idea what that meant. And all these things are changing like literally overnight, where now it's just, I'm just being thrown into this new life and I have no idea, what it means or what's happening. And so I find myself in isolation. And that's one of the worst places an addict can be. Talk a little bit about community and how that helps in reducing isolation.
Well, it's interesting you say that. When I had a recovery, I had to basically delete my friends list that I had in my phone because they were all people that I knew in the adult entertainment industry in and around Houston. And even though I would hang out with them, I couldn't have that as part of my life. And so, for me, it was a very quick trip to isolation because I remember I even called one of my ex-girlfriends when I got found out, trying to find a place to stay or just trying to have a friend because I didn't have any friends that weren't in that situation. So I got thrown into isolation real quick, and man, did that suck! Like it was so depressing to be sitting there by myself in this hotel room in this extended stay and not having anybody to talk to, or not having, my wife didn't want to see me. I didn't have any friends outside of that industry, and I wanted to, get away from that. And yeah, I got thrown in isolation really quick. But it goes back to the quickest way out is to go through. And for me, to go through meant to jump into recovery full force. It's kind of like being thrown overboard on a ship, and you either swim or you die. And you swim really hard, and you kick and you swim and you paddle and do whatever you can to stay afloat because you're going to drown if you don't. Well, the isolation is part of that, analogy where I guess it's the sea. The waves and all that stuff, that's going to cause you to drown in your recovery. And if you don't swim as hard as you can or try as hard as you can to break that isolation, it's going to end up sinking you. You're going to take on that water. And I've known guys that were so isolated. I know one guy that was so isolated, he couldn't tell anybody about this, and he ended up killing himself because he was so distraught over what he had done, and he felt he couldn't tell anybody about it. Literally my next door neighbor, which really broke my heart when it happened, because I didn't even know. And that was just really, really rough on me that the guy was literally, 100 feet away, his house was, and I could have easily helped him, but I never knew. And
Yeah,
so
that
he.
well, and that leads into the next point that I was kind of bringing up is this idea of mentorship and accountability, or as we would put it in our world, is sponsoring someone, right? And I think that's the I always tell guys when you enter into recovery, you have to have a plan. You know, we talk about a sobriety plan. If you don't have a plan, I use the example that it's like kicking a, you know, the reason they call it a field goal attempt in football is because you're aiming at a goalpost, right? If you weren't aiming at something, it would just be a kick. And if you're just coming in and not aiming at something, then you're just kicking the can down the road, right? You're just kicking a football, and that there is no field goal attempt unless you're aiming at a goalpost. And I think that's so critical in recovery is when you find this community is to find someone who will mentor you, find someone who will sponsor you, find that circle of 3 to 5 men that will encourage you and challenge you. And it, you know, it reminds me of Hebrews 12:1. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And that's what I envision when I, you know, when I would like talk, go back to the journal and I would read those notes. And when I go to these meetings, is I feel like this is a great cloud of witnesses that are cheering me on in this race, that these are men who have gone before me. They're ahead of me in many ways in their recovery journey. And they're investing in me as a result of that. And if you're not investing in someone that's behind you, then that means that you're not doing recovery right, in my opinion. You've got to be investing in those that are coming into recovery, or you're just a tourist, right? Or you're just, I don't know what you want to call it, but you're just kind of showing up and sitting in a group and not investing and not giving of yourself and not being real, you know, putting yourself out there. And I'm just telling you, if you're struggling with sobriety, struggling with recovery, I would guarantee I'd point to two things. One, you don't have a plan. And two, you aren't mentoring someone, because when you're mentoring someone, there is a built-in form of accountability that says, I don't want to let this person down.
Mm-hmm. So I'll touch on a few things. And so we talked about accountability. We talked about being a sponsor. And so in terms of continuing the journey, being a sponsor and giving back, I mean, working the program for myself was only 50% of the solution, right? And so last time I heard 50% was not a passing grade, unless it was my physics class, engineering physics at A&M, where a 32 would net you a C+.
That's a heck of a ball curve.
No, the curve was so huge. There was people with like eights and 20 something. It was so bad. I was like, oh my gosh. It's like, oh no, I got a 32. It's like, why? I got a C. It was so pathetic. But anyway, the 50% is working the program for myself. The other 50%, a huge chunk, is giving back. And you're right. If I'm not giving back, if I'm not sponsoring others, helping others through the journey, then I'm only doing half the work. And A, I'm being selfish. And B, I'm not going to get that long-lasting sobriety or healing that the Lord wants from me. The Lord wants me to help others the way he helped me. You know, I love the verse that we talk about on step 12, the praise be to God, Lord and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, of all compassion, the God of all comfort, who comforts me in all my troubles so that I can comfort my sponsee in any trouble with the same comfort I myself have received from God. And so that tells me that, hey, it's part of my duty to help others. And it's part of my recovery. Now, in terms of accountability partners, I strongly agree with having accountability partners that can hold your feet under the fire, if you will. But understand that there's quite a bit of level of maturity that comes along with being an accountability partner and having an accountability partner. Accountability partner isn't just there to say, hey, how's it going, this and that. I mean, an accountability partner challenges you. And sometimes it sucks when they challenge you, and sometimes it doesn't feel comfortable. And it's like it says, when iron sharpens iron, sparks fly, right? And that's mm-hmm. how accountability groups are. That is also part of the community process, but it takes a lot of maturity and a lot of understanding of you know, oneself in order to know that, hey, I'm going to tell my accountability partner that I struggle with this, this, and this. So he's going to keep me accountable on that. If I don't know myself, if I have all these blind spots and I don't have a plan with my accountability partner, then, he doesn't know what to ask me. It's like, oh, how are your kids? How's work? No, let me tell you all about me. Let me tell you about what I struggle with. And you can ask me these questions if you choose. The other thing is, though, in general, like you said before, if a person is not having, I guess, success in recovery, one, they're flopping around like jellyfish. Jellyfish just kind of go with the current, or go with the tide, or whatever however the waters take them. Well, I tell guys, you need to be a recovery shark. You need to know what you're going after. You got to smell blood in the water. You have to go over there and bite that kid's leg off, rip it off, and while he's on the surfboard, and drag him to the bottom of your recovery. And that is plain and simple. It is plan is a recovery shark. I watched Jaws the other day, so that reminded
I
me of
was
that.
really tracking with that analogy until you got to the bite the
Okay.
kid's leg. Yeah,
No, but I do.
I'm with you.
But I tell guys, you got to be a recovery shark. I don't go into all the details, but I do tell them, hey, you can't be a recovery jellyfish. You can't just be floating around waiting for the next thing. You have to make a plan. You have to follow it. There's a saying, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And that is a very simple saying. Now, most times, when I'm not on the podcast, when I'm just joking around with people, I will mess up sayings left and right because it's hilarious to watch their expression. If you fail to plan, you plan to kill yourself, or you plan to fly into a car, blah, blah, blah. And they're looking at me like, what is wrong with you? You don't even know the sayings. Like, I know the sayings. I just like to mess around. But anyway, yeah, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. That's plain and simple. If you're a recovery jellyfish, you're going to get pushed around by the waves, by the tides. You have to be a recovery shark and know what you're doing, know where you're going, and be exact about it. Don't be wishy-washy. Go get it done.
So I had a couple more. I think I'll just finish on this last one, which is healthy activities. And I've got one in mind specifically, but why is it important as far as the importance of community? Why is it important to have healthy activities? And what does that look like as far as community? And be careful.
You already know me so well. My first healthy activity is group masturbation session. That's going to be the first one. No, not at all. So look, when we are in our addiction, we are spending hours upon hours upon days in our addiction. We got to replace that, right? We got to replace it. You got to find something else to do. So when we're in community, we have to engage in recovery. We have to engage in healthy activities, healthy for our mind, our body, and our soul. So I like to read. I love to listen to music. I love to play music. I love to sing. No matter how bad it is, I still sing anyway. And that affects my mind. I read the Bible, I read recovery articles, I subscribe to the Casmonia.org newsletter. And I love it. And that stimulates my mind. My body, deadlifts and squats, bench and chest. I mean, just working out like an animal, walking my dog. You don't have to run a marathon. Some people do. That's great. You gotta work on your body. Do not neglect your body in recovery. And a lot of guys, they do. They just say, you know what? I need to concentrate on the recovery aspect, and they work on the mind part, trying to understand themselves. No, you also have to include healthy amount. I mean, I knew this one guy that was a very hardcore cyclist, like super hardcore competitive cyclist, and he had the hardest time trying to cut back from cycling when he entered recovery. But he did. But guess what? He still cycled. He still worked out. He still did something, not at a compulsive level like he did before, 4 or 5 hours a day kind of thing. He'd calm down. You do like an hour or so during the day, and just kept with that while the initial stages of recovery fell into place. And then, of course, eating right, you don't want to go stuff a huge pizza in your mouth. Although that does sound good, and it is dinner time, so I might have to talk with my mouth full. But of course, your soul, right? I mean, prayer, a lot of prayer, a lot of meditation, going to church, being spiritually intimate with others, prayer requests, praying for others, being intentional, praying for others, doing those kind of activities that help with the overall recovery. We can't ignore all these different activities that that are needed for our recovery, and especially to take up the time we used in the addiction.
I think one of the one thing that I was thinking of, and those were all awesome and
I
on
got it
point.
wrong, didn't I? I got it
No,
wrong.
no,
I
no, no,
answered it
no, no.
wrong.
I
You're
was
going to
going to see if
correct
you could,
us.
I was going to see if you could pick it up though, because the healthiest form of the healthiest activity you could participate in
Oh,
is
sorry.
coming November 8th through the 10th of 2024, where we're doing the Casimony men's retreat. And I know this
Absolutely.
is, we're right now, we're in, what are we in, March
March.
of 2024. So shop early for best selection on those flights to Houston, Texas. Go to the Casimony website. Information probably isn't there right now, but it will be there soon. We'll get you, you can start to get information. But most importantly here, with going to the Casimony website, go and look for groups. If you're in Houston, there are in-person groups. If you're not in Houston, there are Zoom calls, there are telemeetings. There are multiple ways for you to get involved and find community with men who are like-minded. And I'd like to point out one thing, George, that we did not talk about in this entire thing. We've been talking for a little over 30 minutes, almost 40 minutes. And the one thing we talked about, the importance of community, one thing that did not come up at all was anything related to our spouse, our wife, right? And I think that's important to understand, not because they aren't important, they obviously are. And for those of you who are married, that is a significant part of your recovery. But I think the most important part of this recovery is me, Chris, becoming the healthiest version of myself that I can be, because that's when I'm able to be the husband that God has called me to be. That's when I'm able to be the father that God has called me to be. So if you're single, if you're married, if you're engaged, wherever you are in this path of life, the importance of community is still the same, because it doesn't have anything to do with the other side of your, the fence, I guess, your spouse or your significant other. This has to do with you and you becoming the healthiest person that you can be, and doing it with Christ centered recovery like Castamonia. So I highly encourage you, if it's not Castamonia, there's other great groups out there. Find something that fits
No,
you.
there's not. There's not. There's only one
It's
great group. Only one group.
true.
Only one group.
It's true. It's true.
Just kidding.
It's true. Anyway, that's the only thing I want to say there. But any closing thoughts before we sign off?
So, Doug and I, when we did the podcast, I had these occasional giveaways, and what would happen would be like, maybe a month after the episode aired, we'd get an email, asking about the giveaway. Sometimes it'd be like 6 months later, but since we're in March and the retreat's in November, I think we might have time that if somebody emails the podcast, Purity Podcast at castamony.org, and says, what do you think the question should be, or the request should be? You're
It
laughing, so
has,
it's got to be something good.
it has to be something about the rat park, I guess. Maybe,
If you were a rat, what would your favorite thing to do in the rat park? What would it be? So you have to say that the subject has to be rat park, and then you have to tell me my favorite thing to do in a rat park, if I were a rat, would be XYZ, whatever you put in there. And I will scholarship you free admission to the retreat.
Wow,
So
that's awesome.
that's a lot. That's a big chunk there.
Yeah,
So
that's awesome. That's
yeah.
fantastic. Well, George, this has been a blast, man. I always enjoy it. You make me laugh more than any, most people that I know. A lot of fun.
It's the looks. It's the clown
No,
face or something. It's for you.
it's so fun, man. It really does. Like, I guess I'll just not to give you a bigger head than you probably already have, but it reminds me that joy can be found in recovery. I mean, I know you've
Absolutely.
been about it a long time. I've been at it, for 5+ years now, and there is joy. There can be hope. There is hope. And I think it's a good time to remind people that when you're walking through this journey of recovery, you're not walking this road alone. So thanks for joining us today. Join us on the next episode of the Purity Podcast, where I interview Dan Johnson from New Paths. Dan has created a really incredible and very simple plan to help men, well, anyone, conquer their addiction to pornography. See you next time.